Goethe. Johann Caspar Goethe, imperial counselor of Frankfurt, was a stern, stately man, no longer in his first youth, when he brought home to the old house in the Gross Hirschgraben his bride of 17 summers, Katharina Elizabeth, the daughter of the chief magistrate, Johann Wolfgang Texter. It was a great change for the young bride, who was still scarcely more than a child. She had spent a happy life in her father's house with little or no responsibility, and now that was all left behind her, and she was the wife of this stern, stately man, more than double her age, who made her feel as if she was still at school when he set her lessons to learn and tried to improve her mind. Little wonder, then, that when a year later her baby was born, she welcomed him with delight and felt as if she and her little son were much nearer in age than the solemn husband who was so full of wisdom and knowledge. It was in summertime, on 28th of August, 1749, that little Johann Wolfgang Goethe was born, exactly as the clocks were striking midday. The people of Frankfurt on the Main were not at all interested in the arrival of the baby in the old house in the Gross Hirschgraben, but the stars, it is said, were wiser and knew that it was no ordinary child that had just come into the world, and foretold for him a golden future full of honor and renown. Of course, to his mother, he was the most wonderful baby that had ever been born, and certainly he was so quick and clever, even when a little child, that there was some excuse for her pride in him. And surely no child ever had a more charming and delightful mother as playfellow. She had such a sunny, unselfish nature that she was always happy herself and always tried to make others happy. Her eyes only looked for all that was best in other people, and fault-finding was unknown to her. Black thoughts had no place in her loving heart, and she had a marvelous way of smoothing out difficulties and making the rough places plain. All beautiful things were a joy to her, and she shared all her pleasures with her little son, and could tell him such wonderful fairy tales that while he listened, he seemed to be living in an enchanted land. So little Wolfgang began very early to take delight in what was fair and lovely, and to dislike all ugly things. This was all very well as far as it went, but it was not convenient when he refused to play with children unless they were pretty. He was but 3 years old when he was once taken to visit a neighbor where there happened to be a dark and extremely plain child waiting to play with him. Wolfgang burst into tears and pointed a shaking finger at him. "That black child must go away," he sobbed. "I cannot bear him." Needless to say, it was Wolfgang who was taken away and not the black child, and he had to learn the most necessary lesson of self-control. A little sister, Cornelia, came soon to share his pleasures and be his playmate, and he loved the baby so devotedly that he brought all his toys for her to play with and sat like a little watchdog by her cradle. Some other little brothers followed, but none of them lived very long, and it was only Wolfgang and Cornelia who lived to grow up, the greatest of friends. It was a curious old house where the brother and sister played their games and learned their lessons together. It had so many gloomy passages and dark corners that it was by no means a cheerful place, even in the daytime, when the sun shone through the round glass windows and the cheerful voices of the servants could be heard. But at night it was so gloomy and so terrifying that the children lay in their little lonely beds and shivered with fear. It was no use asking that someone might stay near them. Their father declared that children must be taught to fear nothing and to grow accustomed to darkness and mystery. Sometimes the terror was more than Wolfgang could bear, and then he would step out of bed and creep along to try and find some maid or servant to keep him company. But his father never failed to hear the patter of those small bare feet, and his way of trying to make his little son more courageous was not a happy one. Wolfgang creeping cautiously along, was suddenly met by a dreadful unknown figure so much more terrifying than even his lonely bed that he turned to fly and dared not venture forth again. How could he recognize in the dim light that the dreadful figure was merely his father, who had turned his dressing gown inside out to furnish a disguise? The tender-hearted young mother found a much better way of helping the children to overcome their fears and to be brave during the dark hours of the night. She could not go against their father's wishes, but as it was the time for peaches, and peaches were a great treat, she thought of a splendid plan. Every night when they went to bed, she told them to try and be brave and good, and if they did their very best, there would be a dish of velvet-cheeked peaches ready for them in the morning. The very thought of those peaches was like a magic spell to keep away the powers of darkness. The room which the children loved best in all the house was the large room on the ground floor where their grandmother lived. There was always a welcome awaiting them there. And if their father was strict, his mother did her very best to spoil them. In her room they could play at any games they liked, and it did not matter how noisy they were, and then she was like a fairy godmother with her surprising gifts and the sugar plums and dainty morsels which always appeared like magic to fill their hungry little mouths. Many were the pleasures she prepared for them, but the greatest joy of all was the puppet show she gave them one Christmas Eve. There was a tiny stage and little figures all complete and a play to be acted. Wolfgang was wild with delight. It was like a fairy gift to him, and it opened the gates of another enchanted land. But life was by no means made up of fairy tales and puppet shows for the little boy. There were many serious duties to be performed and many lessons to be mastered. The learned counselor had very decided ideas about the education of children, and he began early to teach them himself. As soon as they were old enough to learn anything, Wolfgang and Cornelia had their days filled with studies of different kinds. There was very little time for play, and even playtime was often taken up with instructive pleasure, such as feeding and tending silkworms or helping to bleach valuable old etchings. The evenings were even worse sometimes, for then they had to read aloud from some book so dull and instructive that even their father occasionally dropped asleep as he listened. Then, oh, joy and rapture, there was a chance of escape from the dull prison house into fairyland. They knew their mother would have a story ready for them. In fact, there was almost always one in the making, and they were wild with interest to hear the next part. Wolfgang especially lived in her stories. "He fairly devoured me with his big black eyes," said his mother, "and when the fate of some favorite character was not just to his liking, I saw the veins of his forehead swelling with anger while he tried to keep back his tears. It was all so real to him that sometimes he could not help interrupting, especially if he was afraid things were not going to turn out as he wished. 'Mother,' he urged, 'the princess will not marry that horrid tailor, will she? Not even if he does kill the giant?' 'Wait and see,' was all that his mother would say, and then Wolfgang would go and whisper to his grandmother the ending that he hoped would follow. She always listened patiently, and when the children were in bed, repeated the child's ideas to the chief storyteller to weave into her tale. Great was Wolfgang's delight when next time the story went on exactly as he wanted it to do. 'I guessed it,' he cried, his cheeks burning with excitement and his little heart thumping with delight. But although Wolfgang loved his mother's story so well, he did not specially dislike his lessons, and he was a pupil after his father's own heart. Learning of every kind came easy to him, and the wonder was that the child could do work of all kinds so well. Latin he learned easily because his first Latin book rhymed, and he could hum and sing it to himself like a song. There was very little difficulty in teaching him any language. Greek, Hebrew, French, His ear caught them all quickly and easily. English he learned in 4 weeks from a traveling English tutor, and Italian seemed to him such a funny language that he learned it by merely listening to the lessons given to his sister. He had his own work to do in the same room, and as Cornelia was taught Italian, he listened too, and learned it quite as quickly as she did. There were not many books for children to read in those days, but among the ones he had, Wolfgang was never tired of Robinson Crusoe and the Bible. Certainly the Bible was his chief favorite, especially the stories in the Old Testament of the simple shepherd folk, and he loved, too, the rhythm of the grand old Psalms. It was the book his mother loved best of all, and she used to tell him that all the wisdom of the world was to be found there. On the second floor of the old house, there was a room called the garden room, because a few plants had been set to grow there, and this was Wolfgang's favorite retreat. It was a quiet place in which to learn his lessons and read his books and dream his dreams. Kneeling on the window seat, he could look out of the window over the gardens and the city wall across to the beautiful valley of the Main and the mountains beyond. It was possible to watch from afar the great storms gathering and sweeping up the valley like a host advancing in battle array, and at eventide there was the glory of the sunset to watch and wonder at. All these things were silently woven into the web of the child's life and never forgotten. Very soon after that Christmas Eve, which had brought the delight of the puppet show, the kind old grandmother died, and then the counselor decided to rebuild the old house, which he had not cared to do while his mother was alive. It was not pulled to pieces at once, but rebuilt story by story, so that the family were able to stay there most of the time and watch the rebuilding. To the children, all this was a delightful pleasure. Wolfgang, dressed as a little bricklayer, helped to lay the foundation stone and was never tired of watching the men at their work and learning how a house should be built. There was the joy, too, of playing at seesaw on the planks with his sister and swinging on the beams until he was giddy. But at last, when it was time for the roof to be taken off, it was quite impossible to stay in the house any longer, and so, until it could be finished, the children were sent away to school for the first and last time in their lives. Wolfgang did not like school at all. It was so ugly and disagreeable. The boys were so rough and rude, and they bullied him unmercifully. Perhaps it was but natural that the new boy should receive little mercy at the hands of his companions. His superior manners and the way that he walked with his head in the air were most irritating, especially in so small a boy. Wolfgang certainly carried himself with rather a grand air. Once, when his mother had watched him cross the road with some other boys, she laughed to see his grave and stately manner of walking and asked him if he meant in that way to distinguish himself from his companions. "I begin with this," he answered gravely. "Later on in life, I shall distinguish myself in other ways." It was enough to make anyone smile to see the little 5-year-old boy draw himself up and answer with such dignity. He had been always rather impressed with the tale of what the stars had foretold at his birth, and he asked his mother gravely if she thought they would help him towards that golden future. "Why must you have the assistance of the stars?" she said. "Other people get on very well without." "I am not to be satisfied with what does for other people," was Wolfgang's answer. Such a boy naturally suffered a great deal at the hands of the school bullies, but they did not quite realize what kind of a child it was that they were persecuting, or his wonderful power of self-command. Fighting during lesson hours was strictly forbidden at school, and it happened one day that the teacher was absent and the boys were playing instead of working when they found the new boy learning his lesson by himself, and they determined to make him break the rule. A broom was found, and 3 of the boys made switches and began cutting and lashing at Wolfgang's legs until the pain was almost more than he could bear. Quite unmoved, he sat on, keeping one eye on the clock, while his anger grew hotter and hotter with each smarting blow. Then at last the hour struck, and he was free to fight. In an instant he was on his feet, and so powerful was his rage that before the bullies knew what was happening, two of them were hurled backward onto the floor, and the third was nearly throttled. Wolfgang needed no stars to help him in that fight. The only thing that made his school days pleasant to him was that he was now free to wander about the town by himself and could learn a great deal about the townsfolk and their work and the history of the old buildings. Every kind of knowledge that came his way was welcome to the boy. Everything was of interest. He tells us in his account of his childhood how he loved to wander out onto the great bridge over the main and watch the shining river below. "I always had a pleasant feeling," he says, "when the gilt weathercock on the bridge cross glittered in the sunshine." Then across the river there was the wine market, where he could watch the cranes loading and unloading the casks and see the market boats coming in with their curious wares. In the old town there was always a great crowd on market days, and it was most exciting to push a way through the people and reach at last the bookstalls where children could spend their pennies on books of folk songs or colored paper stamped with golden animals. The meat stalls were a great drawback to Wolfgang's pleasure, and he always flew past them and tried not to see them. The pleasant feeling which the shining weathercock had given him was quite gone now. Frankfurt was a curious old town with its walls and bridges, its ramparts and moats, a fortress enclosing other fortresses, little towns crowded together within the big one. It was all full of interest to Wolfgang, but the Rathaus especially was a storehouse of delight whenever he could find someone to tell him tales of all that had happened there. It was a never-ending joy to dream of the kings and emperors and picture the coronations which those old walls had seen. The child had always a love for old things, old chronicles and pictures, and the beautiful old curiosities in his father's museum. Venetian glass, carved ivories, bronzes, and ancient weapons, they all had taught him to love and reverence the beautiful things of the past in which his father delighted. Yet, in some ways, the present was quite as fascinating to Wolfgang as the past. The everyday work of the craftsman who made pottery as wonderful as Venetian glass was as deeply interesting to him as the doings of kings and emperors. The most exciting time of all the year in Frankfurt was when the two great fairs were held at Easter and at Michaelmas, and Wolfgang loved to watch the people come flocking in from the outside world, their manners, dress, and ways so different to anything he saw in the old town. It was almost like a huge puppet show, especially the Piper's Court, which he thought was the best show of all. It was a relic of olden times, when there were so many tolls to pay that the people used to bring gifts to the chief magistrate to persuade him to abate the tax. The custom was still continued, and at the Michaelmas fair time, the magistrates assembled in the imperial hall, with the chief magistrate in their midst, one step higher than the rest, ready to receive the burghers' gifts. First came the pipers, dressed in blue mantles trimmed with gold braid, and their queer old instruments. Then followed the deputies in attendance. One by one each deputy stepped forward and presented his offering. There was pepper in a wooden goblet, a pair of gloves curiously slashed and stitched and tasseled with silk, a white rod, and some small pieces of silver money. There was also an old felt hat brought by the deputy of the city of Worms, but that was always given back again, that it might serve another year. What made this show so specially interesting to the Goethe children was that their grandfather was the chief magistrate, who sat on the highest seat and received all the curious gifts, and when the show was over it was always possible to make a modest call on him, and perhaps be presented with the wooden goblet, when their grandmother had emptied out the pepper, or the white rod, or one of the silver pieces. The gloves they knew were always kept for their grandfather to wear when he was working in his beloved garden and pruning his rose bushes. The chief magistrate's little grandson was a great favorite with all his grandfather's special friends, and it was little wonder that he grew to be rather stately in his manners and a little inclined to feel superior. It was not only because the boy was so quick and so clever that all those learned old men were so fond of him. It was his goodness and purity as well, which made him as refreshing as the morning dew, and tempted them all to do their best to spoil him. The joyful day arrived at last, when the new house was finished and the children could go home again, much to their satisfaction. It was a much more cheerful house than the old one had been, for now there were scarcely any dark passages and ugly corners, but all was made as light and as beautiful as possible. There was no room for nightly terrors, no lurking places for cowardly fears now. But, sad to say, a terror much worse than the old imaginary ones were waiting to seize on Wolfgang very soon after they returned to the new house. It was the year of the terrible earthquake of Lisbon, and all Europe was ringing with the dreadful news, and Wolfgang listened in silent horror to the tale of misery and woe. He had always felt so sure that the good God took care of everybody, and now it seemed as if he could no longer be kind or loving if he allowed such a terrible thing to happen. Just then, too, a fearful storm swept over the city, and the hailstones broke the new windows, and the rain flooded the beautiful new house, while terrified servants made the children almost as frightened as they were themselves. Wolfgang was only 6 years old then, and he tried to think things out very seriously, with the result that, like the people in the Old Testament, he built a little altar to God, just as Noah and Abraham had done after flood and fire. A year later, when the 7 years' war broke out, the boy had something else to think about besides earthquakes and floods. To Wolfgang, Frederick was the greatest hero that ever lived, and he listened with shining eyes to all that his father told him about the great king. But it was extremely puzzling to find out that his grandfather took the side of Austria and had nothing but blame and scornful disdain for Wolfgang's hero. Here was another puzzle. The Lisbon earthquake had made him doubt the goodness of God, and now he began to doubt the justice of the world. "He is a strange child," said his mother, at the time when one of his little brothers died and Wolfgang never shed a tear. "Did you not love your little brother then, that you do not grieve for his loss?" she asked. There was no answer. Only Wolfgang turned and slowly went into his own room and from under his bed brought out a heap of papers, written all over with stories and little lessons in childish handwriting. "I had written all these that I might teach him," he said. Ever since the early days when he had invented the endings to his mother's tales, Wolfgang had gone on making up stories and filling his mind with all kinds of poetry, besides the lessons he learned with his father, and these little tales must have been a real labor of love to the boy, who was only 9 years old. Those strict lesson hours were very much interrupted just then, when the French troops marched into the town and one of the king's lieutenants was quartered in the counselor's house, to the wrath and dismay of that same counselor. A great deal of life and gaiety came with the French soldiers, and it was impossible to keep the children steadily at work. There was even a theater opened, and there Wolfgang spent golden hours of pure enjoyment, of which the puppet show had been but a dim foreshadowing. Of course, the first thing to be done now was to write a play, and the play was written, but a friend among the actors thought it very poor stuff, and Wolfgang was discouraged. He had noticed, when he and his companions made verses together, that however bad the verses were, the boy who had written them thought them splendid and could see no fault in them. He wondered if it could be the same with him. He was so sure the things he did were good, but then he always found there was something better still to be done. Would he ever reach up to the highest? So he pondered and asked himself many questions, but as yet there was no answer. The flower was very fair, But who could tell them that the fruit was to be so golden and so rare that the whole world was to rejoice in the glorious harvest?